Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is the Writer's Lounge, show number 44. This is April Fool's Day, 2013. I hope you weren't fooled today. I hope I'm not going to be fooled today. So far, so good here in very cold but sunny Minnesota. I'm your host, Tom Riddell. Hopefully along here shortly will be my co-host, Robin Eduardo. I don't see her on the switchboard, so like I say, I hope there's no April Fool here, but if she doesn't show up, we will continue and hope Robin is doing okay, and she might be scrambling to get on the show. We don't know, but we will continue here. Brief intro to today's show. We have on with us today Aditi Chopra, and she wrote a romance called Lost in London. She will be on here about quarter after the hour. Looking forward to that. Also, a little bit about the show. You can find us over at the Writer's Lounge blog over at TomRiddell.com/blog. And if you go in there, you, of course, can read all of the reviews that I've written over the last year and a half on the Writer's Lounge. And if you go to the upper left-hand corner of the page, you'll be able to click on the Blog Talk Radio player, and there you will be able to listen to all the shows. Just find your author there and click on the name, and you'll be listening to the show. Also, of course, you can find us on Facebook, and we are also on Twitter, so make sure you get over there and follow us. And the old-fashioned way, of course, the old email way, twl11@yahoo.com. Send us your request or your books if you'd like when we have openings. Right now we're booked up, but soon we will be opening up. Upcoming authors next time around in 2 weeks on April 15th. That would be Brian Anderson coming in with the Godling Chronicles saga. And the saga continues with Gooey and Kalia and all the wonderful characters in that series. Book number 3. And also book 3 will be up soon in a review on my blog. And I think you will like the review. So go ahead and check out Brian Anderson's The Godling Chronicles out there in your favorite bookseller. And, of course, join us here on April 15th when Brian will join us again here on the Writer's Lounge. Have to open up the promotional request here, of course, for MagicPenWebDesign.com. It offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. So get on over there to Robin isn't here. I don't know what it is. But MagicPenWebDesign.com. And go ahead and click on the free estimate button over there and get a free estimate from the Magic Pen Web Design. And we will help you with your web design project to sell your next book. Hopefully you'll get on over there and do that. Caller instructions for tonight's show. If you'd like to give us a call, by all means, do so at 626-213-5613 or toll free at 877-878-1436. Those are the two numbers that you can use to call our program tonight. Also, I would like to let you know that we have a new program now, and it's called The Ad for Authors. And if you would like to promote your book on our program here for two shows. You will get a mention on our program. And also, your site or your book will go up on the left-hand side of our Facebook page. And I know that many of you that go into these like pages on Facebook will see over on the right-hand side your responses. And a lot of people complain because it's so small, but you will be able to get your book over there on the left-hand side of the page in big, huge, living color. If you send us $10, and you can do that by sending me an email, twl11@yahoo.com, and I will explain that process to you. Just put in the subject line, book promotion, and I will help you with that. That's a neat feature that we have. And, of course, Dawn Whitten had written a book and been on our program here a while back called A Child is Torn, Innocence Lost, and she is one of our sponsors here, and we would like you to go and read her book. So get on over there and put into your search engine A Child is Torn, Innocence Lost, and you will be able to connect up with Dawn in her book. Wish her much luck, much success in that wonderfully written story of a young 10-year-old boy who ends up killing his parents, something that I think you will find very interesting to read, and I hope you will do that very soon. Okay, so we have a lull in the program. Normally at this time, I would introduce my co-host, and Robin's either forgotten today's program and will be with us next time around, or she is busy doing something and can't pull herself away, and we will bring her back. I feel like a lost little puppy here without Robin, but I will continue and do my best, and I think what I'm going to do in this time frame until our guest author comes on, and she's written once again a book called Lost in London, and Lost in London is a very short story. It took me all of about 2 hours to read, and it's a great little short story that you can read on a plane, at an airport or wherever you're at, doctor's office. It's one of those stories that kind of neat to have when you're out there and trying to, kill a little bit of time, so to speak. So hopefully you will all get an idea from her book what it's like to write a short story. And that's kind of like a dying art. I don't know. There's a lot of authors that come on the program who have written pretty lengthy novels, and it's actually a pleasure sometimes to read a short story, and I don't do much of that, so it kind of takes me back a little bit because there's not a lot of character development in a short story, but it's very interesting nonetheless. And right now what I would like to do is bring on, of course, the master himself, Stephen King, who talks about short stories, and I can't remember the content of this little clip, but it lasts about 5 minutes, and it'll last right up till the point when we introduce Aditi here at about quarter after the hour. So enjoy, and I'll be back right after Stephen talks to you about short stories.
Sitting here with Stephen King, author of way too many books for me to list right now, but most recently of Just After Sunset, which is a collection of short stories and a return to form for you on the short story front. But thank you so much for sitting down with Borders today.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah. So, Just After Sunset, you write an introduction in the book which talks about the fact that short stories are sort of an art form that not everybody and not a lot of writers tackle anymore, and that you mentioned is something that you can sort of lose your touch on a little bit. Is that true?
I think it is true. Of course, number one, I wouldn't have written it if I didn't think it was true. But number two, it's the kind of thing where I think a lot of writers who sell a fair number of copies and can support themselves with their writing, and we're very fortunate to be able to do that, have a tendency to think of the novel. And once you get your mind set on the novel, it's very easy to lose whatever trick it is that involves writing the short story. There's a little metaphor in the introduction where I said that I could imagine some craftsman from the Middle Ages forgetting how to make Toledo steel and just looking sort of sadly at a botched job and saying, I really used to remember how to make this stuff. And I think, too, that the novel is a quagmire that a lot of younger writers stumble into before they're ready to go there, so that it was a piece in maybe PW or one of the magazines, one of the magazines associated with writing and publishing a couple of weeks ago, where their columnist said, there is some, oh, I know, it was in the Boston Globe, where this lady said, enumerated a number of great short story writers who have not written any short stories for a while, and you ask him that why, and the same reason is given time after time. Well, I'm writing a novel, and so the short story production dries up. Now, for me, I started with short stories when I was 18, sold my first one when I was about 20, and produced pretty much nothing. But, well, I wrote a couple of novels, but they were not accepted, and a lot of them were so bad that I didn't even bother to revise them. But the short stories were making money, and I got very comfortable with that format, and I never wanted to leave it completely behind.
Is a short story, like you hear some people who write short stories talk about the fact that in their mind they have these massive novels written about these characters, but really what you see on the page is just a sliver of a story that's in their brain that they could tell, they could write a novel about it in most cases.
It is true, and what happens to me a lot of times is I will start out saying this would be a terrific short story idea, and it balloons and becomes a novel. Misery started as a short story. And Gerald's Game started as a short story. Those were things that I thought would be small and grew to a size where they would be a novel. But on the other hand, there's a story in there are three stories in Just After Sunset that are fairly long. They're in the 22 to 25,000 word length, which would make them novellas. There's one called A Very Tight Place. There's another one called The Gingerbread Girl that was done in Esquire. Mm-hmm. And there is Anne, which has not been published before. And in fact, Anne was submitted to The New Yorker. And I had a sense that they thought about the story very seriously and sort of wanted it for The New Yorker. But finally, what they came back with was, this is just too long for the market. So that can present a problem. There really is that length of 22 to 25,000 words is kind of a twilight zone for writers. It's too short to be a novel, but it's too long to be a short story. And the real short stories that very talented short story writers like Raymond Carver are able to write, there's almost an art of miniaturization that's involved. It's a difficult craft. Right? It's a very demanding craft.
Do you try to take your, like, N, which was 50, 60, I don't know how many pages, but it's a novella, to your point. Did you try or think about taking that and making it even smaller?
No, N is just the right length. It's just what it's supposed to be.
Okay, that was the artist himself, Stephen King, talking about the short story, and looks like we have Aditi waiting in the wings for us here to be on the Writer's Lounge, and we will welcome her shortly. I will introduce her book, and her book, Lost in London, was written by Aditi Chopra and published by Create Space in 2013. You may purchase it at Amazon.com/Kindle, of course, and you can visit the author over at www.aditichopra.com. And this is what they have to say about it on Amazon. Raul, a young and charming consultant who works in San Diego, California, goes on a business trip to London where he meets beautiful Priya. They feel an instant attraction towards each other. However, Priya, being shy and untrusting, holds back her emotions when Raul returns to San Diego. Raul also finds himself getting attracted to Mona, a co-worker in his office. As the story progresses, Raul is torn between his feelings for Priya as well as Mona. As we follow the two love stories, we wait for the inevitable reckoning to be made between love and true love. Lost in London is an exploration of finding and recognizing true love. And this is what I have to say in my review. In this modern age of dating and the last fast-paced demand of both our professional and personal lives, it's important to not lose our grasp on what our souls will still yearn for, and that would be a true, lifelong, and eternal connection between two people who share a deep affinity for one another. True love is especially hard to find, but if it finally comes calling and you're not careful and attentive, it could slip away forever. Lost in London is a story that reminds us of how fleeting relationships can be in our fast-paced world. It takes us into the lives of Priya and Raul, who share their time with one another, and an attraction begins to grow in a long-distance relationship. But another relationship threatens to rip Priya and Raul apart. Can they survive the challenge? Lost in London is perfect if you are looking for a fast-paced read and want a little romantic interlude. It will make you think about what is important in a relationship. Although the length of the story may have been designed to be short, I encourage the author to explore and to develop her characters and plot more thoroughly in future novels. This is a very good start, and with that, I would like to welcome back to the Writer's Lounge. Of course, she was on here a little time ago, and when we did seven authors, and she is back here with us now. And Dee Dee, I'm waiting for the thing to line up here, and looks like you are there. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you doing?
Very well. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Where are you calling from today? Whereabouts?
I'm calling from my home.
And where would that be?
From Dallas.
Oh, you're in Dallas. Okay, so it's
yes.
Kind of warm down there, isn't it?
It's starting to get warm. I'm actually happy about that. I was tired of the cold.
Yeah, and it's cold up here, and we had our first baseball game today, and the Twins are playing in 32-degree temperatures. So the sun is shining, and it looks nice out, but it's brutally cold, and it's probably a lot nicer down where you're at right now.
Yeah, yep.
Yes, and Aditi, normally we would have my co-host on, and I don't know what happened. I hope it wasn't an April Fool's joke being played here, but she isn't on the program, but we will continue without her, and she will hopefully maybe even show up. So we're waiting patiently, and hopefully she will. And if not, we will continue. And we were just wondering, could you read an excerpt from your book?
Yes, absolutely. Let me get that, and I'll read chapter 3 of my book. And I guess you can stop me when the time is up, because I may just keep on reading.
We'll keep going. We'll usually give around 2 to 3 minutes, but when I find the right time, I can cut you off, or you can cut yourself off. No problem.
Sure. So chapter 3 here goes. It was relatively a warm day for March in London. Priya felt beautiful in a pure white Indian suit with a white chiffon chunni draped around her neck. She wore her matching silver dangling earrings and anklet. She thought that the vibrant holy colors would look perfect when added to her outfit. The thought of celebrating the festival of Holi with Rahul was quite exciting. She was glad that he decided to stay with them again, this time around on his business trip. Priya knocked on Rahul's door. "Hey, Rahul, you should be getting ready soon. We are going to South Hall today." Rahul asked, "Why?" "To celebrate Holi, you forgot? It's going to be so much fun." "Oh, okay. I'll be out in a few minutes. I hope it's going to be with just dry colors." "Oh, don't worry. It's definitely with dry colors. I'm so glad that ever since I moved from India 6 years ago, I haven't missed this festival, thanks to the celebration here in South Hall." "Oh, and if you have a white kurta pajama to wear that, it would be a lot more fun," she added. Rahul walked into the family room looking fresh in his white outfit. He sat next to Priya, who was enjoying the holy songs on the television. "You look all set to play holy," she said, looking at him. Rahul smiled. Priya's mom walked in with a plate in her hands. She wore a plain orange sari with embroidered white flowers. "Happy Holi to both of you," said Priya's mom. "Come here and pray with me for a minute." Priya's mom was not a very religious person, but she prayed every day for a few minutes, and definitely on festivals and special occasions. She had set up a small temple in the hallway of her apartment. Priya's mom had lit Indian incense, whose fragrance had a soothing effect in the apartment. "I want you to have some gunchas. I made them yesterday. Hope they have turned out good," Priya's mom said after the prayer was over. She made this dessert called gunchas every year on this festival. It was typical of the Holi celebrations, and she knew how much Priya loved them. "Mmm, they're awesome, Mrs. Singh," said Rahul as he grabbed the second one. "I haven't had these in so many years that I almost forgot the taste." "Thanks, Rahul. I'm glad you like them too," said Priya's mom. "You know how much I love cooking."
Well,
Priya was glad.
That gives us a good flavor of the book and going forward here with a love story that you have crafted very well here, I thought. A very short story, like I said. Now, this is a story between in different cultures, right? Priya is Indian, and Rahul, is he also Indian or is he American?
Yes, Rahul is also Indian. Most of the characters in this book are Indian.
But Rahul's been kind of indoctrinated to the Western civilization more over here in the United States than over in India, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So you've got two different cultures clashing. Not that they don't understand each other because they're both Indian, but they've lived a different kind of lifestyle through the years. And then your two main characters, Rahul and Parvaya, are good example to people who are trying to find and deal with all the complexities, of course, that love can bring in these modern times. Why did you write this story? What prompted you to do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I often get asked that question. When I look around, I've found that many people are struggling with the notion of what is true love. They're asking, you know, how do I know whether what I'm feeling is love or not? And I'm not saying that I have the ultimate answer, but I do seem to understand it more than I did, let's just say, 10 years ago.
Okay.
And so my the inspiration for the story was really to express my interpretation of what true love is. And I've always wanted to have this aim for my writing where I have some message that, you know, people will hopefully resonate with and, you know, can relate to.
Yes. You know, it's very, very difficult for people nowadays to enter the dating world. Myself, being in my mid-50s here, am now back into that world, and it's a little bit intimidating. And not so much intimidating because I enjoy getting together with people and enjoying time with them. But you know, when you're talking about love, it's interesting because sometimes love takes a while for it to happen. It doesn't just happen when two people get together. It's never always love at first sight. In the case of Rahul and Priya, it seems to be that way also. But also you do have somebody coming into the picture, another character in your book, who I would say brings in the lust of it, which kind of confuses Rahul into thinking that he's in love when maybe he's not, and then it confuses the relationship with Priya. So it's a very complex, as I said, a very complex thing now to get involved in when you're dealing with falling in love with somebody. And also in your book, I found it interesting and pulled me through the book with a lot of interest that in this book, both of the characters travel to different cities in the world. How much research did you do, Aditi, in regards to this, and have you been into the cities that were mentioned in your book?
Yes. I'll answer this by first mentioning that I absolutely love traveling, and I enjoy seeing different places, not just the places, but learning about different cultures and traditions and the people that I visit. And so it's my hobby, and I've actually been to all the places that were mentioned in my book. So it was kind of easier that research was done in my head already, but also I did some research online where I needed to.
Did you, when you entered these cities, did you take notes? Did you know you were going to be writing this story, or did you write the story after you traveled to these cities?
Some of the places I have traveled a few years back, and at that time I had no idea I was going to write a book.
Okay.
And so I had some pictures. I had. I used to always, you know, maintain an album and write notes next to my photos. So those helped a lot. And some of the places I had visited recently, so the memory was more fresh.
Now, can you give me a? Can you give me a, for instance, of a city that you traveled to that may or may not be in the book that you enjoyed being in?
Oh, not in the book is Costa Rica.
Okay.
I loved traveling there. You know, the rainforests and the wildlife and the different kind of plantation that you see over there is just very intriguing, and people are really nice, you know.
Right.
Also the food.
And the thought just occurred to me, when you travel into another city in another part of the world, and you're talking about love, which your book is about, do you find yourself, I mean, once again, I don't know your marital status or whether you're single or married, but would you find it intimidating to even think about falling in love with somebody? For instance, if you saw somebody in a street cafe and you found them interesting or handsome, would you be a little intimidated by maybe approaching that individual, being in a different culture or a different part of the world?
And no, I certainly won't be intimidated, but you asked about my marital status. I am married. I've been married for about 20 years.
Okay.
But the way my mind works, the way I look at relationship, it's very hard for someone like me to fall in love at first sight. I have to get to know the individual. It has to be a more of a mental connection before I even start feeling that feeling.
Yes, and when you have a long distance connection or a relationship, that even makes it a little bit more difficult to maintain. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
That's what your two characters were challenged with, was keeping their relationship together as they dealt with the separation of many, many, many miles. So it was very interesting, and you know, interesting to a lot of us that are maybe looking to build a relationship with somebody in another part of the world, or even in the United States here, you know, from one state to the next, from West Coast to East Coast. It's very difficult sometimes to make that connection, although in today's world, I think it's a little bit easier with all the social media going on, that we can kind of connect our lives together and hopefully have enough money where we can fly and travel to see one another. But in your book, of course, you've got Raul and Priya, and I always ask the authors on the Writer's Lounge, how real did your main characters become to you? And did they control the story, or did you?
That's a very interesting question. So far, I've written two fiction stories, and you know what? When I was writing them, believe it or not, I used to dream about these characters. A few times I would, you know, wake up in the morning and I'll start to write down what I dreamt about or what the characters were telling me in my dream to how to take the story forward. So without realizing it, I got into the skin of the character to understand the next move. And that to me was very, very interesting to observe.
Yeah, I think when the characters actually take hold and start to pull you along, it now becomes a story that someone else is telling and not just you. And when that magic happens is when we have done our job and we are now into a story that we're not telling, once again, that the characters are actually telling. And at that point, it's almost impossible to put the pen down or put the typewriter down or these days the computer keyboard down. We need to continue because it isn't just our minds that are telling us what needs to be done, but it's the minds of our characters that are pushing us to get the job done and get the novel written. And of course, you wrote this book in... Now, how long did it take you to write this book? It's a short story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how long did it take? It took me about 6 months to write my first draft. And the reason it was 6 months was because this was my first book, so I was learning the craft and improving while I was writing it. So if I were to write a similar length story now, I would take, you know, much less time. But that's about the length it took for me.
Right. So now the next piece of work that you'll be putting out will be more of a novel length. I mean, it'll be a longer story than this one, correct?
What I'm working on right now is a trilogy. I will probably have a novella length for all three of them. That's my plan so far.
Okay. That's nice. And I think, you know, some authors that have been on our program have dived right into the long novel, which I am one of those. I'm still working on my novel, which is close to, at this point, 80,000 words into it, and that would be considered a full-length novel.
Right.
Kind of shooting for 100,000 words, and it's very difficult. Like I say, it's very difficult for a lot of us, including me, when the characters develop their strategy and push you forward. It's hard to cut it off. So it is an art to write a short story. And we were listening to Stephen King, and there's a gentleman who has written all kinds of works, long and short. And I found that interesting what he had to say about the short story. But when you write, Aditi, where is it that you go to get in the mood to write? What do you do to prompt yourself? I like to listen to music. Some people don't like that. Some people like going to coffee houses. Some people like sitting in their office at their home. Some people even write in bed. We've had authors who have been inspired in the middle of the night and sit there at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning writing a novel in their bed. Where do you go and how do you get yourself in the mood?
Yeah, great question. I'm not the kind of person who would listen to music when I'm writing because it kind of disturbs my thought process. So I'd like, you know, a very quiet surrounding. I write from my home office most of the time. There's only been a couple of times I wrote from my bed because I think I was not feeling well, so I said, okay, let me take my laptop and write in bed. But I generally write from my home office. One thing I do is I don't write every day, but I wait for the right thought or the right inspiration or the aha moment before I write. And what that means is there are some days or some weeks when I don't write at all because I'm not getting the right thought in my mind. But I feel like that helps me because then I don't have to go back and rewrite it. And
right.
It works for me.
It, as you earlier mentioned, in your dreams, and then you would wake up, and of course you would need to get that down in some way, longhand, shorthand, or on a computer. And also I wanted to ask you, and this is of interest to me, and I know a lot of people out there, what type of laptop do you use to write?
I have a HP laptop.
Okay.
Nothing fancy.
Okay. And a lot of people go with the Apple. For some reason, that works well for them. And anybody who has gone to an Apple never seem to want to go back to the HP or the regular laptop. So I find that interesting. Also, for some strange reason, I have an Apple, and I just love writing on that. What advice, Aditi, for somebody who decided to start writing books, what advice would you have for someone out there listening to us today who may want to pick up a pen and be an author?
Yeah, I would tell them to be original and write about something that's unique and something that they know about, a subject that they know about. I think it's very important for a writer to offer something unique of their own. Because I see some people where they, have a role model and they try to imitate another author's style, which I don't personally agree with. I mean, you can learn from their style or their process, but we should always offer something unique of our own.
Yes. In regards to that, it's I lost my train of thought here. That's where usually Robin comes in and bails me out.
I forgot what I was going to say,
so we'll move on to the next question. There has been much debate regarding book covers and how important are they to the story and to the potential sale of the book, and how much time did you spend in deciding what was a good cover match for this story?
Yeah, great question. I've also heard that quite a bit, that book covers are important. I think they are, because when I look at books, I look at covers too. I was very lucky to work with a cover designer who was very patient with me. I had a very different thought of what I wanted on the cover, but when we started working and we looked at a few different designs together before we finalized the one I have, I actually wanted either Big Ben or London Eye on the cover. And when we worked with that, the cover looked really busy, and I personally don't like very busy covers. So we said, I thought that we already have London in the title, so it's very obvious that it's based in London as the setting, so we don't need to have, a landmark building there. But I wanted to show that it's also a story of Indian characters, and so that's why we picked the cover that that we have right now.
Right. In regards to that, also getting into the publishing part of it, did you go the traditional publishing route, or did you go to self-publishing? I'm looking at your, it would be done on CrateSpace, so it would be more of a self-publishing, right? Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And
go ahead.
And what kind of challenges has that been for you? How has that worked out for you?
Yeah, so I've been self-publishing for over a year now. I've had a lot of non-fiction titles that are doing pretty well. So I think I just wanted to continue with that trend. But what I've found is that fiction is so much different from non-fiction. And so the self-publishing part is easy, and, the author is in full control of the process. But when it comes to marketing a fiction book is very different from marketing a nonfiction book.
Yes.
At least from my experience. And it's harder. It's much harder. And I don't know what the reason is, but I feel that, you know, reading fiction is a hobby versus reading nonfiction is, it helps you with your job or career, at least the books that I've written. So that's my analysis of it. I could be wrong.
Okay, I guess I didn't ask you, what other books have you written?
I've written books on leadership and management.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and they're doing pretty good. I have audiobooks for them as well, and I've heard good things about them.
Now, can you you want to promote a couple of those books and tell us a little bit about what led you into writing those?
Yeah, I have extensive background in software engineering. For I've worked in Cisco Systems for about 20 years. And I've been a leader in different positions, been a manager. I've also been in a leadership role outside of management. So my books are really from my own experience. And one of them is titled 10 Mistakes a Manager Should Avoid. And the other one is Leading.
Give me two of those mistakes.
So... the first one, I would say, not building trust with your employees. And the second one would be not building relationships with your colleagues and coworkers.
Okay. Very good. That's very good. And what's the name of your of the book that you just talked about again?
Yeah, the management one is called 10 Mistakes a Manager Should Avoid. And the other one is titled Leading Without Authority. And that book is mostly for positions where, you know, leaders are in the support role, such as project managers, program managers, product managers, that are given a lot of responsibility, but they have no direct reports, so no one to have authority over. But they're still asked to deliver a lot and be responsible for a lot, and it's a tough, tough job. So my book talks about different styles that one can adopt in those tough leadership positions and how a certain job profile can match that style. And once you know your style, what your natural style is, you should go for the kind of job that matches with your style, because then you'll be natural and you'll be successful.
Wow. Now, this is pretty much, once again, based out of Texas, but do you attend speaking engagements?
No, I haven't so far.
Okay. Okay, that might be something you might want to think about. And those books that you published, were those the non-traditional self-publish, or did you go the traditional route with those?
No, they are self-published. Before I started writing, I surveyed a few different authors, and they suggested to go the self-publishing route. So I guess that's how I started.
Okay, so you never had any experience in trying to submit your works to a traditional publisher, right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. As I've said all along here on the Writer's Lounge, a lot of the authors, of course, have been on our program, have been involved in the self-publishing field, myself included. And then there's a few that have gone the traditional route of publishing. And the self-publishing can be very challenging, and I think you alluded to, as far as marketing. It takes a lot of self-marketing out there in the social media sites, especially, to get launched into, a satisfactory list, shall we say. And I know a few of our authors, and one coming up here on April 15th, I always talk about Brian, because he started off not selling anything hardly, and then all of a sudden sales just took off. And when you ask him how that happened, he doesn't have a direct answer. It's a combination of a lot of things that you have to do to get your book sold. And there's some luck involved, too. Let's not forget that. But it sounds like You've done well starting out here, and of course with your nonfiction books also giving yourself a name. Some of the people that may have read those books would be interested to read your romance novel, which is obviously fiction. So it's very interesting to listen to all the authors and how they're going about selling the works that they write. Now, this is a question that we ask all of the authors on the Writer's Lounge, and it's a very interesting question, I think, and I'll pose it to you now. If you could sit down and talk with a famous person or writer, who would it be, and what would be the first question you would ask them? And I usually preface this by telling them that, excuse me, that you're walking into a building and you're walking down a hallway and you open up a door, and inside this, beyond this door, is a room with one table in the middle of it, and the person is sitting at the table. Now you walk in and you sit down in front of this person. So again, who would this person be that you would like to ask a question of?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I have so many authors that I look up to, but one name that comes to my mind is I would love to meet Deepak Chopra.
Oh.
I've heard him speak. I absolutely love his voice and, you know, all the inspirational stuff that he talks about and writes in his books. But one thing that really comes off and I would like to learn from him is he's really calm. And I always wonder that people who are such high achievers, they have to have some level of anxiety, because yeah. I have it. And so I would like to learn from him, how does he remain so calm, and, you know, what's the trick behind it?
Is there any relation there?
No, I wish. But none at all.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen him on a few television programs, and he is a very interesting character. And remaining calm, especially in today's world, is unique, and I think it's very much something that's a great quality and needed, because our lives are so busy. I'm thinking of all these new technologies that we're encountering today with the smartphones and all of that, and looking back, say, maybe 20, 30 years ago, one would think that looking into the future, you'd want your life to be simpler. And in some ways, they are simpler and faster. It's like a microwavable society now, but it seems that all that extra time that we spent on creating these new technologies, instead of it being filled up with silence, we're filling it up with other things, which is complicating things even more. So I think there's a real need for meditation, and I think Mr. Chopra is somebody that I think that, you know, one of many people that we should be looking to help us live a more calmer life, especially when we're looking for love. You know, I think it's important to kind of get in touch with our inner souls before we reach out to that other person that might be there. And your two characters in your book are pretty much like that in a lot of ways. But we're getting kind of close here to the end of the program, believe it or not. We got a little less than 10 minutes here. But any other subjects that you would like to touch on from your writing experiences, or about life and, of course, love in general? I'd like you to add a little bit more to the love equation here and what it takes for people to find that very special thing we call love.
Yeah, great question, since my book is about true love. If I have to really sum it up shortly, I would say that love always empowers you. It never holds you back. So if anyone is in doubt of what they're feeling towards the other person, they should really ask themselves, is this person empowering me, or is this person holding me back? And I think that's a key
give me
to...
we've got some time left here. Give me an example, Aditi, of empowering. How would somebody... Give me an example of somebody empowering somebody else.
Yeah, well, so we all have our own goals and what we want to do in life and, you know, what's our soul telling us to do. And if your partner understands that and is supportive of that and helps you achieve that goal, whatever goal it is, it could be a career goal, life goal, or whatever it is.
So, for instance, you and I, let's just, you know, use a little fiction here. You and I are married, let's not even go that route. Let's say that we're dating. Okay, and we're getting close. And so then I tell you, Aditi, what I really like to do is I'd really like to go skydiving. I love skydiving. So would you like to come with me or you know, can you give me some thoughts on skydiving?
That's an interesting one.
And the reason I pose that is because what you touched on is important, that you want to empower somebody to do something that they want to do when, in fact, maybe you don't want to do it at all, but you still want to make sure that they reach their dreams and their goals. So how would you go about doing that?
Well, if I am too scared to do it, I would still support you in achieving your goal. And I would expect that you will understand that I'm too scared to do it, so you would not force me to go skydiving with you.
Okay, but you would pretty much tell me to go jump out of a plane, right?
Well, if you really want to do it and you're sure you can do it and you have the courage to do it, then I would, yes.
Okay, but you would also want to make sure that I knew what I was doing before I jumped out of the plane. In other words, I went through the right instructor and learned all about what I need to do to make the jump, correct?
Of course, of course. Yeah. Safety comes first.
Yeah, that I think is very interesting because I think a lot of couples, what happens is they'll get involved in a relationship with somebody who will like something and the other person doesn't like it, or maybe they find it interesting. And then there's the other ones where they find it appalling that this person would be involved in doing something that they would never want to do or never would want to see anybody else do. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but maybe the extreme fighting. I don't know if you've ever seen that on TV, but you've got the guys up there pretty much bashing each other's brains in with their bare fist. So if you're in a relationship and your boyfriend wants to be an extreme fighter and that's his goal and you have just met him, I would think it would be kind of difficult for you to want to be in a relationship with somebody who's going to be constantly beat up by another man. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm just using that as an example, but I think when the feelings start percolating when you meet somebody and they want to do something that's so outlandishly weird that they might not want to involve themselves in that person's life, but if they really do feel for them and they have feelings for them, they might want to reconsider and kind of help them along the path to do what they want to do regardless. So it's interesting, but I like the... the plane analogy, you know, parachuting or whatever you do out of a plane and helping somebody along. I think that's a key. And at the same time, I would have to look at you and say, you know, I would like you to come along. It would be great if we could both do this. It would be a great experience for both of us. But at the same time, I understand you're apprehensive about jumping out of a plane at I don't know how many feet up they're at, 15,000 feet up, I don't know. But, but yeah, so once again, your story kind of got me thinking about these things that come up in today's world, and I really appreciate you being on today. And could you tell everybody once again where they can find you on the internet?
Yes, I have a website, and I'm also on Facebook and other social media. But if people go to my website, which is www.aditichopra.com, then all the information about my books and my social media sites is all there. So that's the best place to go to.
And once again, what's the next book that's coming out? You say you've got a book of three, right? Is that what you said?
Yes, so I am currently working on a trilogy. It's romantic, suspense, and I don't have a whole lot to talk about it, but it's going to be, again, with Indian characters. I mostly write fiction about Indian characters that live outside of India.
Okay.
So that's going to be my focus.
Very good. Very good. Well, we appreciate you being on, and I know that if Robin was here, she would say the same thing. And hopefully we'll be on again, and keep listening to the Writer's Lounge, and you'll find us over there at the Writer's Lounge over at Blog Talk Radio. And look for our archives over there if you want to listen to your show. And make sure you plug it into your website so you can get the people out there that visit your website to listen to you, because you were a very interesting interviewer today. And thank you once again, Aditi, and best of luck to you.
Thank you. I enjoyed being on the show.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay, there is Aditi, and she is off to write her next work. And I'm really sorry, because I feel like, once again, I'm dead here because I don't have Robin with me, but I think we managed pretty good. And with that, I'd like to once again offer you to come back next time on April 15th, when we'll have Brian Anderson on with the Godling Chronicle saga that continues. This is book number three, and I will be doing a review over at the blog site at tomridell.com/blog over at the Writer's Lounge blog, and I'll look for that within the next 2 weeks. And once again, that's April 15th. That's tax day, and look for Brian Anderson on our program in that time, and we will see you next time. Until then, good reading and good writing from the Writer's Lounge.
Rainbow. trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow.